This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. Little Enter Sandman there. Get you excited for the Junkies, Monday through Friday. The best sports show in town, breaking down the Washington football team every week. And doing the pregame shows this year with JP from the Junkies is my guy Logan Paulson, who I'm bringing on right now on the hotline. Logan, good morning, buddy.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm good, man. Good to hear your voice again. It's been a while since I've had you on my show, but before, we were just talking about the season and getting excited for the season. It's finally here, man. How are you feeling 2 weeks in?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's definitely exciting to be watching and talking about football again. You know, I think with regards specifically to the Washington football team, I'm like the rest of the D.C. area. I kind of understand that this year is a building year, so I just hope to see a lot of growth. And I've seen a little bit of growth thus far, and hopefully that continues in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, especially being a former player, you can see the future, whereas a lot of other people, I mean, the Twitter warriors are out there that every week they're like, fire the coach if we lose, bench Dwayne Haskins after an incompletion. I mean, everyone needs to slow down, I think, a little bit, and you're right, this is the first year of the Rivera era, the Ron Rivera right era, and tongue twister there, but I think it's been a solid start. I think it was a huge win week one against the Eagles, and now this Cleveland matchup ends up being huge because the next 5 weeks are so tough. What do you think?
No, yeah, I think absolutely. And the thing that's exciting for me as a fan, football in general, is I think this week is going to be a much better matchup for the Washington football team than last week against the Arizona Cardinals. I think the way the Cleveland Browns play football kind of fits into more of what the Washington football team strengths are, right?
Yeah.
They're a little bit better at stopping the run. They're a little bit better against conventional offenses. And so I'm excited to see that defense be able to kind of pin its ears back and play football, because, you know, they had to deal with Wentz the first week, Murray last week, you know, and Baker's mobile, but not quite as mobile as those two guys. So see the defense really go. And then the other thing that I'm really excited about is the space that the Browns defense plays with. Like, if you look at the second half of the game last week, Haskins really came alive when the Cardinals kind of stepped back and gave the receivers some space.
Yeah.
That's how the Browns defense plays just regularly. So I'm excited for, hopefully we can get the team to get back on track this week.
I'm joined by Logan Paulson, former tight end for the Washington football team here. And you mentioned it. It's been a struggle out of the gate for this Washington football team. Both games, the first half has been ugly. The second half, they completely turned it around. But my question is simply, why has the team struggled out of the gate, man?
Well, I think it's a lot to do with the youth of the team. You know, everyone, I think, looks at them and they say, oh, they're professional football players. They need to be playing at a high level. And that's not wrong. But they are super young. You know, they haven't spent a lot of time together, and the fact that they're learning a new offense, like I was watching the game last week, and I saw the O-line have a difficult time passing a stunt off, right? And I thought, oh man, they should be able to do that. Then I kind of took a step back and thought about it. I was like, they're with a new offensive coordinator, they're with a new O-line coach, a guy that emphasizes different things than the previous regime. They might not even be using the same techniques that they've been using for the last 3 or 4 years, depending on how long they've been in the old offense. So I think it's going to take a lot of growing and a lot of time and a lot of time on task and a lot of reps before we see a lot of improvement. And I know that's not the sexy answer, but that's what I think ultimately the truth is.
Yeah, no, you make a really great point there. Something I hadn't thought of, which just the change of the systems there and simple things like passing off the D rusher. What kind of problems do you think Cleveland on offense can cause with this Washington defense that's been so good? I mean, their defense has been what's kept them in games. What kind of problems can Cleveland offer them?
Yeah, so this Cleveland offense is essentially what San Francisco runs. It's a run-first offense, very in the Kyle Shanahan mold of an offense. They're going to run the football, you know, 50 to 55% of the time, and they have the backs and the offensive line to do that. They have Nick Chubb and Marcus Hunt, that's not his name, the guy from Kansas City, both very, very talented rushers, and they have this great two-headed monster in the backfield. They're both big backs, physical runners, great contact balance, so I would expect to see a huge dose of those two guys early in the game, because when that team is able to get those guys going, Baker Mayfield is able to settle down. The play-action game comes alive for them. So what I want to see and what I'm excited to see is, can this Washington football team front with those vaunted draft picks along the defensive line, kind of our more traditional run-stopping linebackers, you know, and Collins in the back end, who's a more of a run-stopping safety, can they put their mark on this game and force Baker Mayfield to win the game?
Yeah, and so can you elaborate on that a little more? Because I'm totally with you there. I think it's 100% the number one thing we have to do is stop the run and stop the run early, the first couple drives. And so you mentioned a guy like Landon Collins that's a run stopper. And then you mentioned this D-line. How much of it is on the D-line compared to the linebackers like John Bostic and Kevin Pierre-Louis making plays? How much of it is more on Chase Young and Montez Sweat or Daron Payne and those guys?
Well, I think that's one of the things about the Kyle Shanahan offense, and I think this is going to be a buzzword, but he runs a lot of outside zone stuff. And the idea with that is that you're stretching the defense, you're stretching the gaps, you're moving the front to the sideline and hoping that someone gets out of a gap. Because sound defense, you fit a man for a gap, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you have good edge players, you can set the defense can set an edge, and they can't stretch the ball the way that they want to, and it really mitigates the effectiveness of the outside zone run game. So I think if those two guys on the edges can do that, then you can let those interior linebackers, who are, in my opinion, just from watching them, more thumpers, you can let them thump, let them be physical players, and let Payne and Allen be disruptive. You know, if they can't set the edge on a defense, on an offense like this, you mitigate the effectiveness of those guys inside where their strength is kind of being physical, being tough guys, you know?
That was a great answer. That's why I have you on. That's Logan Paulson. I'm Adam Epstein. And the next question for you here is, who has shined for you so far on offense? What have you seen from this offense here in Washington? And who is it that's kind of done more than basically what's handed to them to basically shine and make plays? And I think Terry McLaurin's the obvious answer, but I'm wondering what you're thinking.
Yeah, definitely McLaurin has been really, you know, like you kind of see why everyone in the NFL is so excited about him, so excited about his skill set. But the guy that I've been really impressed with, especially in week 2, was Gibson. I think he had a lot of really, really, really muddy runs, making guys miss in the hole. And that ability to make the first defender miss, break that first tackle, and make something out of nothing is the sign, in my opinion, of a really special back. So I like that he kind of showed a lot of growth from week 1 to week 2. And I would expect to see some more growth like that into this next week. And especially if you get McKissick involved and kind of, you know, keep Gibson fresh. Like, I was really, really impressed with what I saw from him. And obviously, like, you know, the defensive line has just been playing at a very, very high level. You know, Chase Young, I think,
yeah. You
know, he hasn't got home as much as I think everybody thought he would be getting home, at least the first 2 games. But he plays football the way it should be played. He plays hard. He's got a great intuition about sniffing out screens and draws, and he's been really good against the run, which was surprising to me. So he's playing good football. So those 2 guys, in my opinion, very excited about them.
And the tight end question has to come now, because Logan, you were a tight end here, and now we have a tight end also named Logan with Logan Thomas. And I feel like he's struggling. I feel like he's not creating enough separation. And maybe I'm critiquing him too much, but I feel like he's not getting off the ground high enough on some of these passes. His vertical in the end zone on that one catch, he dropped it because he didn't get high enough off the ground, and I think Haskins actually did put it in a good position there for that, and that was a key 3rd down against the Cardinals. So why do you think Logan Thomas is struggling?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I've said this before. He's a guy that I've always been impressed with his athleticism, you know, because he's kind of new to the position. And then last night, or, you know, Sunday night, like, I didn't see that same athleticism that's kind of been a trademark of his over the course of his career. And, you know, that could be a myriad of things. He's getting older. They just travel. It's an away game. You know, not recovering effectively from the first week. He's getting more reps than he's used to because he's kind of the full-time starter now. So how's he handling his recovery in that situation? So I like you, was a little disappointed with his performance, but I'm not ready to, like, to punt on Logan Thomas yet. I think he's got a tremendous amount of ability. Again, it's a new offense, new system. You'd like to see him make some of those plays on the contested ball because that seems like that would be his skill set. That's what he's shown an ability to do in the past. So, you know, again, a little disappointed with his performance last week, but I'm hoping that he can rebound this week against a Cleveland defense that doesn't have the same talent in terms of coverage linebacker. You know, maybe he'll be able to create more separation against a guy who's, you know, Devondre Campbell, in my opinion, is like a top 10 cover linebacker in the NFL against tight ends. So that's a tough matchup for Logan Thomas in his second week as a full-time starter. So this week I'm hoping for a better matchup for him.
That's a good breakdown there, and I totally agree. I think he's the safety net for Dwayne Haskins to get rid of the ball when he's rushed, so we need him to improve, and I'm not giving up on him yet, but I'm with you. I think there is room for improvement. A lot of people have been talking about Ron Rivera's coaching style. There was a lot of talk about how great it was that he went for that fourth down against the Eagles that won the game, and then there was a lot of hate and a lot of backlash for kicking the field goal against the Cardinals and then not using his timeouts there at the end of the game. What are your thoughts on Ron Rivera and his coaching through two games?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Twitter warriors or the Monday morning quarterly.
Yeah.
I think a little bit of that's going on here. You know, I think the situation was so, so different. You know, they say, oh, he went for it on fourth down in a similar situation. And to me, there was nothing similar about the situations. Like, in week one, they had all the momentum. Everything was going in their favor. That, in my opinion, is when you go for those fourth downs, when you're confident, when your offense is gaining confidence. You are in control of the fight, so to speak. In this last game against Arizona, they had control over nothing. They were not in any position to be kind of gambling. And I think the other thing that people need to consider is that the defense was not doing a great job against Arizona. But to counter, they were doing a great job against Philly. So if you go for it there and you miss it against Philadelphia, you're expecting a three and out on the subsequent drive by Philadelphia. However, against Arizona, there is a chance that they possess that football for 5 or 6 minutes and you don't get the ball back until midway through the fourth quarter.
Right.
Points on the board. So in my opinion, you right at that point, like, and obviously there's arguments from both perspectives here, you have to take the points, right? Because you don't know how the game's going to progress. Take the points. You might get hot. You might go down there, score 10, and then you're, you know what I mean? So, like, take what you can get, build a little momentum, get that going. And then with regards to the timeouts at the end of the game, like, I think you just have to look at the way the offensive line was playing. Not to be critical of that group because, you know, like, they're coming together. There's a lot of young guys there. But Brandon Sheriff, probably the best player on your offense, is out. You're bringing a backup guard who's a good player but hasn't played with that group. Like, how effectively do you think that group with two young guys on the left side, a new right guard, are going to be able to protect your young quarterback? How effective is he going to be in that situation with all of those variables kind of stacked against them? And I think Ron Rivera understands that playing quarterback is also about building confidence. And if you cannot build confidence for him in that situation, I totally understand not taking your timeouts, getting out of there with a healthy Dwayne Haskins, regrouping, licking your wounds, going into next week looking for the victory.
I'm Adam Epstein, and joining me right now on the hotline is Logan Paulson, former tight end. And I want to talk about the defense, and specifically the chipping blockers like a tight end or a running back going against a guy like Chase Young. Specifically, he got his first sack because he was going against the left tackle, and the running back tried to chip him, and he used that to spin back into the inside and sack Carson Wentz. I thought it was an incredible play. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on Chase Young, Montez Sweat, and then I, for one, am obsessed with the ability to have a Ryan Kerrigan come off your bench as a backup DN there.
Yeah, I definitely think like having that three-man rotation is huge. You know, and four, if you count Anderson, I think they've all got some very, you know, quality pass rush ability. The thing that I would like to see is them to become alive a little bit more in critical situations. Like, I look at, like, the best D-lines that I played against and the best D-lines over the last 5 years, and they had the ability to take a game with both hands and just say, we are going to put our imprint on this game in this moment, and you're not going to be able to convert a third down because we are so prolific with our pass rush. And I think that they are talented in that way. I think they're so inexperienced. They still have a lot of growing to do. But I would like to see them to start to do that a little bit more, take over a game in the same way that they did against Philadelphia. And I'm a little cautious about that game because Philadelphia was so banged up on the O-line. But I'd like to see that situational football come alive for the pass rush a little bit. Yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts on them. And Chase Young specifically, like I said, a great player, doing great things, but can still grow as a pass rusher, obviously.
Yeah, and Logan, the audience out there, 106.7 The Fan, P1s, can listen to you on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. all the way up until the 1 p.m. kickoff. And so it's a little different here from when you were playing in the NFL. What's your game day routine like now? Are you still getting up and pumping iron? What are you doing before you meet up with J.P. Flame?
Yeah, so usually I get up around 7 o'clock. I'll hit a little workout, get my last review, put on a Redskins talk radio, a Washington football team talk radio while I drive down to the city just to kind of get my mind thinking about the names and stuff, do a little review with JP, and then we're into the game. So, you know, not too much different than my actual game day, but, you know, it's nice to kind of have a routine on Sundays now that I'm not playing so much anymore.
Yeah, and it's nice listening to you on the pregame show. I don't know if anyone's ever told you this, but you can say JP 10 million times. You can never say the name JP too little. Just JP, JP, JP. It's just a bit with the show. It's a running bit. You just say JP before a question, after a question, throw in a JP right before commercial break. That's my advice.
Absolutely. I'll have to give that a shot this weekend.
So I know you're going to pick the winner of the game on the show tomorrow, but for my show, who is the winner of the first half? Can I get a score prediction for you? Is Washington going to get off to a hot start? Is Cleveland going to take it to us? Let's go with a first half score prediction from Logan Paulson.
So I actually think that in my gut, you know, the scientist, the empiricist in me doesn't believe this, but the emotional side of me believes the Washington football team is going to be ahead at halftime this week.
Oh, I love hearing that, man. Say it one more time for me, baby.
The Washington football team will be ahead at halftime this week.
That's right. That's my guy, Logan Paulson. You can hear him tomorrow morning on The Fan at 11 a.m., man. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yep. No problem. I'm Adam Epstein here till 12 noon on The Fan. Don't go anywhere. Always happy to be hosting on a Saturday morning. There's just so much to talk about. You can talk about the NBA game we got tonight, talk about Bubble Mania as a whole. But I've got to focus on the Washington football team and their matchup with the Cleveland Browns and how important this game is, because the next five games are tough. You've got the Rams, the Ravens, and then three divisional games with Giants, Cowboys, and Giants again. Those are toss-ups. I mean, so I think at best you maybe go 1-4 in those five games or two. I mean, those are some tough opponents. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, DC sports fans out there. But I'm going to say it. I'm picking the Ravens probably for the next 5 years against the Washington football team. Lamar's too good, guys. He's too good. I mean, we just saw what a mobile quarterback did against us with Kyler. But I promise this segment, start your engines, boys. It's the Keys to Victory, brought to you by Adam Epstein, presented by Adam Epstein. I am Adam Epstein. So, we need to stay healthy. We need to stay healthy. Hopefully, Morgan Moses can tough it out. We need Thomas Davis to play. And we need more of Kevin Pierre-Louis, who's been excellent. But Dwayne Haskins, I said it earlier in this game, in this show, he's been 2 of 12 passing the ball over 10 yards. We need more of that. And J.D. McKissic has been 8 for 50. Eight rushes for 50 yards. Give him the damn ball. So here's your keys to victory. Number one, scoring 10 points in the first quarter. Can't get blanked anymore, guys. It's three weeks into the season now. You can't get blanked. You got to score. I want a touchdown on our first drive and a field goal on the next. I'm telling you, I want 10 points in the first quarter. That's my first key to victory. My second key here, this is your key to your front door. Baker Mayfield has thrown a pick in his last 8 games. Get to him early. Bring him down. Force a turnover or a quick throw. You got to cause a turnover in the first half against Baker Mayfield. Because if they're able to run the ball successfully, that second half he's going to burn you with his play action. His short, stubby, little stocky legs. He runs out and he rolls out, and he's accurate on the run. And he killed the Bengals last week with that. All right, key number three here on The Fan. This is the key to your back door, where you keep all your supplies. You got to get McLaurin involved early and often. I need 100 yards receiving from Terry McLaurin if the Washington football team is going to win this game. Now, I don't know if that means you get him involved early with a screen pass like we've done a few times with my guy Steven Sims, or maybe it's an end around, or maybe it's just a quick cut across the middle, or maybe it's just a slant, but target him early. Because Terry McLaurin has shown that once he gets one catch, boom, all of a sudden he has three, and he has 75 yards. And he is incredible. I need to spotlight this. This man catching, what do they call it, yards after the catch? His yak. This man's got yickety-yickety yak, dude. He is so good at staying on his feet. I mean, it looks like he's falling over, and he puts like one hand on the ground, and he'll break three tackles and get an extra 8 yards. He is so good at catching it and keeping his legs moving for an extra 5, 10, 15 yards. It's impressive. So get McLaurin involved early. This Cleveland team is built to run the ball down your throat and then beat you with the play action. That's why taking an early lead is so huge. Change their game plan. Force Baker to throw to set up their running game. Force Cleveland to chase from behind and not play with the lead, because they can play with the lead all day. They will gut you out with their two running back system if you let them get a two-possession lead. Keep the game close and try to stay ahead and on offense as long as possible. Contain Odell Beckham Jr. and don't let Baker Mayfield go off for 300 yards. That's my keys to victory. It seems simple. We should be able to get it done. You see that? Let's get it. Let's get it, Washington fans. I want to hear from you guys. 1-800-636-1067. Because I didn't think we were going to be at week three here sitting in first place. Yeah, we're 1-1. But the Eagles and Giants have been trash. They've been poo-poo. And the Cowboys were a mind-boggling onside kick away from being 0-2. The fact the Falcons didn't know the rules is incredible. And the fact that Dak even came back from that biggest deficit is incredible. And Dallas is going against the Seahawks. I don't have them winning this weekend. So this is so huge for us to stay in first place. We're playing the Cleveland Browns, ladies and gentlemen. We have to get it done. I'm Adam Epstein. Joining me next is my guy Lance Meadow, who covers the Giants for SiriusXM in New York. And we're going to break down the entire NFC East and go through around the NFL and the biggest stories and notes. I'm Adam Epstein. Don't go anywhere. I'm Adam Epstein, and this is 106.7 The Fan DC Sports Radio. And joining me now on the hotline is Lance Meadow, one of my favorite guests to have on to talk NFL, a SiriusXM sports host and also the Giants radio pre- and post-game host. Lance, how you doing today, man?
I am doing very well, Adam. And what a joy to know that I am being held in such high regard in terms of your pedestal when it comes to guests. This makes me even ultra-excited on this Saturday morning.
I'll tell you, Lance, here's what it is. The number one thing is I'm super jealous of your voice. Number two, I think you got a great gig in New York, and I'm jealous of that. And number three, you're honest, and you know the entire NFL. So that's why I go to you, man.
Well, please keep throwing these compliments my way, Adam. You know, I could never pat myself on the back long enough, so it's always good to hear it from other people. But no, in all seriousness, it's a pleasure coming on your program and look forward to discussing football as always.
Yeah, and I get you on because I was introduced to you by my guy Andrew Passaro. He says when COVID's over, you owe him 100 beers. But anyway, let's break down the NFC.
He owes me a lot, too. Let's make that clear. He also needs to return the favor as well.
So I want to break down the NFC East first. You're a Giants guy. I'm a Washington football guy. We got the Cowboys also in first place, the Eagles at 0-2, but I'm picking them to win this weekend. So who do you think is the most hurt? Who can get healthy right now between these teams? And because the Giants losing Saquon really hurts their season, and the Cowboys are a team that think that they're going to be able to get real healthy around week 6 or 7.
Yeah, it's interesting, Adam, because as you just alluded to, a number of these teams in the division are physically hurting, and that's certainly reflecting based on the standings. The loss of Saquon Barkley is significant. Let's face it, Adam, nobody on the Giants roster, even the addition of Devontae Freeman, comes anywhere close to the game-changing playmaking ability that Saquon Barkley brings to the table. And all you have to do is go back to last season. Saquon was sidelined for 3 games, okay, it was the ankle injury. there was a 6 to 7 point differential in terms of when Barkley's on the field versus when he's not on the field. And to make matters worse, by the way, Adam, it's not just Saquon Barkley. Remember, they also lost Sterling Shepard, one of their top wide receivers. He's going to be sidelined for at least the next three games with the toe injury. So what you're doing now is you're saying to Daniel Jones that he now has to overcome those obstacles. And the last thing you want to do if you're the Giants is have Daniel Jones be throwing the football 40-some-odd times because of his turnover issue. So to me, this completely changes the dynamics of the Giants' offense. But most important, it now puts opposing defenses in the position to say, until the Giants prove they can run the football, which they weren't doing effectively when even Saquon Barkley was healthy, they're dead last in the NFL right now in rushing yards per game. You're telling the Giants, until you prove to us that you can run the football effectively, we're not going to have to put 8 or 9 guys in the box. We're going to now put the pressure on Daniel Jones. So I think those two losses are significant. As far as the Cowboys are concerned that you hit on, to me, the biggest loss for them was Sean Lee and Leighton Van Der Esch.
Yeah. It's
similar to Barkley, Adam. If you go back over the last few seasons, and this to me gets overlooked, when Sean Lee was the main guy, even before they drafted Leighton Van Der Esch, the Cowboys' defense, when Lee is on the field versus when he's not on the field, two completely different teams. Well, it's the same thing with Van Der Esch. So until they straighten out the middle of the defense, and you're putting a lot on Jalen Smith and a relatively young secondary with some new parts because they moved on from some of the players in free agency, you're going to have to put a lot of pressure on this Dallas offense, which we certainly saw with respect to their comeback victory over the Falcons. A lot of games via the offensive clinic. And they could certainly win the division that way, but when you come to the playoffs, that could easily come back to bite you.
Yeah, and the Cowboys, for the first time since playing the Patriots in Foxborough last year, are mathematically the underdog in terms of Vegas odds. They've been favored every other week. They've also had zero leads this season, but are 1-1. I think you've got to pick the Seahawks.
Well, I think Seattle has been by far the more consistent team. No disagreement there. I think they're the more balanced team. What Russell Wilson has been able to do with far lesser talent than most quarterbacks also can't be dismissed. And right now, based on what Seattle did, as you just hit on, with respect to the Patriots matchup and then their first week matchup against the same Falcons team the Cowboys just beat up, you have to wonder, when is Dallas going to have that game where they can slow down the opposition and take some pressure off of Dak Prescott so he doesn't have to be playing from behind, and they can play with a lead so therefore they can establish the run with Zeke? Remember, that's the identity of the Cowboys. It's not to take anything away from Dak, and I think he's probably one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. He doesn't get enough respect, but the Cowboys want to pound the football. They want to set the tone that way, and they want to rest the defense. In years where the Cowboys have won the division, it has come as a result of dominating time of possession, running the ball with the likes of DeMarco Murray and Zeke, and keeping the defense on the sideline. That's going to have to be the recipe they're going to have to follow this season. And right now, Seattle's not the type of team that's giving out gifts. So no doubt about it, Seattle deserves to be the favorite.
Yeah, and year in, year out, I love the NFC East. I want to say that we're great. But again, it's the NFC least. The NFC West is 2-0. The NFC East collectively is 2-6, you know, so it's terrible. And the Eagles are a dumpster fire. They keep losing players to injuries. To me, my opinion is that Wentz seems to have already peaked. All his potential has been met. This is who he is. It's his fifth year, and now he looks like his worst. So I'm not a fan of the Eagles either this weekend, but it's a tough matchup. What do you think?
Well, I think the problem with the Eagles is one of the things you just hit on, he's had issues with turnovers. Carson Wentz already has 4 interceptions. They had 3 turnovers in their loss against the Rams. So you would say, if you look at the box score, you would say, okay, well, Philadelphia shored up its pass protection issues, right? Because in week 1, Washington sacked Carson 8 times, and that was a huge difference maker. Okay, so he's not sacked against the Rams, but the problem is they don't take care of the football. So if it's not one thing, it's another thing. I don't know necessarily if I would agree with you, Adam, and say that Carson Wentz peaked too early. I think, like anything else with quarterbacks, when you change the personnel around the quarterback, you can't expect the quarterback single-handedly to overcome things like perhaps Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's more of an exception than he is the norm in the NFL. What I mean by that is, okay, so week 1, Carson Wentz is dealing with a game of musical chairs on the offensive line, and we know what happens when you don't give pass protection to your quarterback. He didn't have Miles Sanders. Now you have Miles Sanders in the lineup. Think about the receiving corps. Last season, they were using running backs and tight ends as converted wideouts. Well, this season, you got Jalen Reagor, your first-round pick in week 1. You're trying to build chemistry with the deep ball, and now all of a sudden he has a torn ligament in his finger, and he's going to be out indefinitely. DeSean Jackson in and out of the lineup, the tight ends. Once again, I'm not trying to make excuses here for Carson Wentz, even though it may sound like that. The bottom line is he has not benefited from continuity, the same personnel around him, and also the injuries have kept him out of the lineup in terms of building chemistry. So I don't necessarily agree with the sentiment that he's peaked too early. I think the problem with the Eagles right now is they've got to get that unit on the field at the same time to work on the chemistry, and they clearly need to do a better job of protecting the football. I just talked about the Giants and their issues with turning over the football. I don't care how much talent you have, Adam. We could go through every roster, and you could tell me they got Pro Bowl talent left and right. Any team that doesn't take care of the football, which we saw with the Chargers last year and the Giants, who are dead last at turnover differential, it is no coincidence that those two teams won 5 and 4 games respectively. It goes hand in hand.
Before we go around the rest of the NFL here, let's focus on Washington, who's playing Cleveland this week. And in my opinion, it's Cleveland. It's a must win for us. If we get off to an early lead, I think we'd completely change their game plan, which is just wanting to run the ball down our throat there. So what is the New York state of mind of Washington here?
Well, I think the issue with Washington right now is a bit of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because of what happened in week one when they came back against Philadelphia. I think part of that, not to take anything away from Washington, but they took advantage of a banged-up Eagles offensive line, and that's exactly what they should, because the strength of the Washington defense is the front seven. But week two, what happened, Adam? You played catch-up again, right? Because they were down early against Philly. They worked their way back. Then all of a sudden, Arizona jumps out to a 14-0 lead, and you can't keep playing this catch-up mentality, because you don't want to have Dwayne Haskins, who people forget, he did not play double-digit games last season. He has yet to play one full rookie season, okay? He's still midway through his rookie season. Let's not forget about that. I don't want to put Dwayne Haskins in a position, if I'm Scott Turner, where he's throwing the ball closer to 40 times versus 27 to 28 times. And I know he was right in the middle at 33, but you have to abandon the run when you play from behind, and you're making it the Dwayne Haskins game. And I don't think that's the position that he's going to thrive in. So, you know, you look at a team like Cleveland, which certainly has its own issues, but Cleveland also has a very strong front, guys that could get after the quarterback, and we know Washington's offensive line is still a question mark. If I'm Washington, I want to pound the football. I want to put Dwayne Haskins in a position where he's playing with a lead, because I think that completely changes the dynamic. So until Washington does that, and until they have more balance and they're not putting an immense amount of pressure on the defense, it's hard for me to imagine a situation where you would favor Washington. I think right now they're a team that is doing a lot of heavy lifting on the defensive side of the ball, hoping that their pass rush rescues them and their offense is not meeting them halfway. These first two games, this is a Washington team hovering around 20 points. They only scored 15 against the Cardinals. I don't care how talented and how much upside you think maybe some of these offensive weapons have, such as Haskins and Gibson. If you're hovering around the 15 to 17 point total, there's no way you're going to consistently turn that into wins.
Yeah, no, you're totally right there. That's Lance Meadow from SiriusXM covering the Giants. I'm Adam Epstein. And Lance, when you think about the best stories in the NFL this year, I think it's got to be one of the Raiders with their fast start, or the Bills being 2-0, or the Titans, keeping right where they left off last year at 2-0. What is your favorite story so far?
Well, I think one of the teams that jumps out to me in line with what you're talking about, Adam, is the Pittsburgh Steelers, because Pittsburgh was a team that was hovering around 500 last season. They were actually 8-5, and then all of a sudden they lost their final three games and just missed out on making the playoffs. But now we see what this team is capable of doing when they're fully healthy, whether it be Ben Roethlisberger, James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster. They had one of the best defenses in the NFL. They led the league in sacks last season with 54, and T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree are picking up where they left off. I love the makeup of this Steelers team. I love Mike Tomlin. People forget he has yet to have a season with a sub-500 record since he took over as the Steelers coach, which is quite amazing in a league defined by parity. So when you take that into consideration, I think the Steelers, I'm not saying I'm surprised, but I'm happy that they're fulfilling expectations in the early stages of the season. So Pittsburgh would be right near the top of the list. Tennessee, I think, also has been impressive, picking up where it left off. I was not necessarily sold on this Tennessee team. Jarrell Casey, they let go of. He was traded to the Denver Broncos. You wonder whether or not Ryan Tannehill can piggyback off of his season last year. And I think Tennessee is winning by the chinny chin chin. Okay, let's face it. They haven't been a dominant team, right? They've played two very close games against Denver and Jacksonville, respectively. But you don't get brownie points for that. And I also think they're taking advantage of a division, which I think is wide open. Houston's 0-2. Indy is going to be up and down. And Jacksonville is going to go as only far as Gardner Minshew and a very young defense takes them. So the expectations need to be kept in check. So those are the two teams I would say in the AFC. As far as the NFC is concerned, I'd say Chicago has been a pleasant surprise. I don't think they were anywhere near dominant against the Giants, but their defense is certainly respectable. Trubisky and the offense, you still want to see more out of that group. And then the Rams, starting off 2-0 in a division that you just hit on earlier. You've got three teams in that division that are 2-0. I'm very high on three teams making the playoffs in that division. Remember, the Rams were 9-7 last year. They just missed out, and we get an extra playoff team in each conference. So I don't think, once again, the Rams are fooling us. But I would not have picked the Rams as one of the top three teams. I actually see Arizona, San Francisco, and Seattle as the favorites to make the playoffs. Though we're going to have to see how the Niners weather the storm with respect to this injury bug right now.
Oh, Lance, thanks so much, man. Another great segment here on the show. Everyone can follow along and follow your career and watch your tweets at Lance Meadow, M-E-D-O-W. Lance, thanks so much, man. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You as well, Adam. And the spelling of the last name was extremely critical, so you get bonus points for squeezing that in. I thank you very much, Adam.
Yeah, no problem, man. Enjoy your weekend. All right, I'm Adam Epstein, and one more segment to go here on a Saturday. Stay with us. Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. I'm Adam Epstein, and I did want to take the time here to address the obvious. That was that I made an announcement that I left the Junkies for a full-time job at Podcast Village, and I felt like it was the right move in my career, and thanks so much for the Junkies for everything they've done, for giving me a shot, to giving me chance after chance after chance to entertain you guys Monday through Friday with AWOD segments. Thanks to CK for giving me a shot to continue on weekends, and whenever he needs me, I'm here. It could be a snowstorm, 2 a.m. You want me on the radio? I'll be there. And I'll still be producing sports shows for Podcast Village, so check them out. You can follow me at The One Sports Nerd if you want to see those. But just want to thank everyone for the overwhelming support I got. I mean, I'm not usually a guy to bring up his Twitter stats, but I had 618 likes on that announcement. I had like 85 comments, people saying how sad they were, they're going to miss my segments and all that. I mean, incredible. Love the stuff. And so now I have a new job. I'm working the normal 9-to-5 life, guys. And I'll tell you, I'm wearing a mask all day, every day, and burping has become a huge problem. A huge problem. Especially since I've gone to District Taco 3 times for lunch. My breath smells like steak al pastor. And I'm fogging up my glasses every day. It's been a huge issue. But I'll work that out. And I've been playing Monopoly with my friends. We're addicted. We don't need the bars anymore. Just a couple beers and $20 on each game of Monopoly as we battle it out for the universe. Each roll, I say, is a year of your life. One game, I spent 10 years in jail. Yeah, I lost that game. So hit me up if you want to play. I also have the Monopoly app. I want to tell everyone to watch The Boys on Amazon. It's a great show. If you missed any of the show, you can catch it on the Overtime 106.7 The Fan app or use the Radio Rewind feature on the radio.com app. My guy Sean Summers, an excellent job producing. I'm Adam Epstein. I'll be back next Saturday on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.